This is CliffCentral.com.
It's Frank Ocean and Migos with Slide. Great stuff. 5 after 8. CliffCentral.com. It's time to talk about one of the icons of South African history and someone who I think many of us have a lot of respect and interest in. A lot of respect for, a lot of interest in. And we've got Linda Vilakazi, who's the CEO of the Oliver and Adelaide Tambo Foundation, who's going to join us this morning to have a quick conversation about the foundation, about what they do. But Linda herself has been a very important person in various places. Gauteng School Governing Bodies Advisory Council, the Tebe Foundation Board, the Telkom Foundation as a trustee. She's an alumnus of WITS and joined the OR Tambo and Adelaide Tambo Foundation as the CEO on the 5th of September last year, taking over from very well-known Mr. Mavuso Msimang. And this morning I thought we'd talk about these two stalwarts of South Africa's past and of the struggle and just get to know a little bit more about what their foundation does. So, Linda, it's a real pleasure to have you here this morning, and I'm so glad that you could make it, especially on Mandela Day. Are you doing anything special today?
Yes, and good morning, and thank you for having us here. We're doing something quite special today. Mm-hmm. I think most people are not aware that actually Nelson Mandela and Adelaide Tambo share birth date.
That's right.
And traditionally, when she was in the country, they would always start today with a cup of tea, and then they would all go their own separate ways. Of course, Mandela was larger than life, and all the cameras would follow him correctly. So, but Adelaide has a school in Soweto that was named after her. It's called the Adelaide Tambo School for the Physically Challenged. It's a public school that has a boarding school part right in Jabavu. And caters for learners with disability from grade 1 to grade 12. And since the school was named after her, she would then, after having tea with Mandela, go to her school and share cake with these lovely kids every year on the 18th. But she used to go twice in a year for special days because the school was also named after her in May, on May the 28th. So on that day, she would again go have tea with the school, with the kids, and it was called the Adelaide Day till today. On the 18th, on her birthday, before she could get diverted to any other important duty, she would start with the kids, share cake with them, and whenever possible, bring them some gifts. Instead of her receiving gifts, she would give to the kids. So today, we joined hands with the Mandela Foundation, and we're doing a big Adelaide Mandela event at the school, which is anyway part of the 67 minutes of giving. So we've got a lot of companies that have looked at the school's needs and have donated all sorts of wonderful stuff to the school to anchor the school and make it more habitable for the kids. So we would be acknowledging them today, whilst at the same time City Parks, Joburg City Parks, would be helping to clean up the school and put in some extra greenery. So it's quite a busy day. Now, I think, like all South Africans.
I'm sure it will be. The foundation, though, does a lot of work which involves perpetuating the legacy of O.R. Tambo and Adelaide Tambo.
Yes.
I mean, these two people, really, for many young South Africans, the only thing they know about O.R. Tambo is the airport. and I think that's very unfortunate. This was a man who was the president of the ANC for some time. He was an intellectual. He was an anti-apartheid politician. Mm. He was a revolutionary.
Absolutely.
And was looked at by people like Nelson Mandela as their leader. His contribution was enormous in exile, in keeping the ANC together through some very, very difficult years. But what do we not know about this couple? What do we not know about the two of them together that we should know?
Thank you. I think you've summed up their life quite beautifully, and thanks for that, because that shows you one of the South Africans that at least know a lot about them. But I think they were they were serious activists in their own rights, and also unbeknown to most. You know, when the husband becomes famous, we often think that the wife benefits and becomes known because of that. But Adelaide, in her own steam, at the age of 18, joined the ANC Youth League purely because she watched the brutality by the police meted against one of her family members, and she couldn't take it. She was a young girl, very traumatized, and felt, I have to do something. We cannot live in a country where I watch the police brutalize my parent in this manner, and life goes on. And that pushed her to become an activist, joined the ANC Youth League movement, studied as a nurse, as a social worker, and gave all to the community. As a nurse, she nursed so many comrades who were beaten up, and some of them couldn't even access medical aid because they would still be in hiding at home, but at the same time hurt, and she would visit such people. I recently learned that Timol's family also used to get her visiting them, because I bumped into one of the niece.
Oh, yeah?
And she was like, "We remember Mom Adelaide visiting our family so many times simply to comfort us because of the trauma we were going through." So I think it was by no accident that the two of them met, that the two of them felt attracted to each other, because their values and their goals were the same. And I think that's why they were able to build the kind of formidable team they were. And when Oliver was sent to exile, who could keep the home fires burning
right.
in a strong political base other than Adelaide? And that's what she did. Their London home was known as the home for all comrades who left the country. Anybody who passed by London on whatever mission would go past the house. Most women who felt dejected at times whilst in exile would go spend hours with her, get her counsel, get her motivation, and get back on the wagon. And a lot of very well-known women today credit their success to her. People like Mam Zanele Mbeki, people like Nkosazana Zuma, people like Lindiwe Mabuza, mm-hmm. Zonke Majodini. They tell stories of nights that they spent with Adelaide in that house. And some of them would say they would even arrive and pretend to clean the house. And as they went up and down scrubbing, that's the time they had their deepest political discussions with her. So she was the mother of the movement whilst Oliver was building the kind of liberation struggle we had against apartheid.
It's almost as if she allowed people to kind of gather around her, and she provided them with sustenance.
Absolutely.
She provided them with a succor, you know, some kind of... Yeah. Some way to make it through those very difficult times.
And they were also both quite quite strong Christians, believed strongly in the faith. And again, most people don't know much, but Oliver Tambo has a famous quote where he says, "I had my own plans in life, and my plan was to be a minister."
That's right.
In the Anglican Church. And that was my plan until I was convinced otherwise. So they strongly believed in church. So the Anglican Church has always been their home. Tambo was a great music lover, even conducted some orchestras. I'm told in the bush there were lots of singing from songs that he himself, you know, would set up and get them singing. He played golf, which we discovered recently was a good golfer. So we always
really?
Wonder, when okay. did he play what? When did he do all of these things? As all we know is that he crisscrossed the world, you know, mobilizing support against apartheid. But whilst he did that, he was still a human being who enjoyed the finer things in life. And I think those are the things that grounded him.
And I remember when he died in 1993, it was really, it was only a few days after Chris Hani's assassination.
Yes.
So there was, it was a tumultuous time, and there was a lot going on. And a lot of people say that maybe part of the reason he suffered that stroke was because he was traumatized by Chris Hani's death, and he was concerned about what was going on.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an old man already at that stage, but he was very much one of the people who Mandela would refer to, who he would go to for advice. Mm-hmm. Thabo Mbeki credits him as being his great political teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Adelaide Tambo only died in 1997. 2007. But the two of them really had a long and lasting influence on politics, mm-hmm. even beyond their deaths.
Correctly so. Actually, when you dig deeper into their history, you'd realize that Madiba became the Madiba he is because he relied strongly on O.R.'s wisdom. They almost became like big brother and younger brother. Of course, the age difference is just a year,
yeah.
as we all know. Madiba wouldn't do much without checking first with O.R. there's a quote in which in the Long Walk to Freedom where Madiba says, of all the 27 years I was in prison, not one day went without me having a mental conversation with OR. Wow. And that's how strong their link was. When he came out, most of the ANC activists wanted OR to be the president, the first president of South Africa. And OR relentlessly kept on saying to them, it is Madiba. It is Madiba with the character to take us to the next step. And he was quite strong on that. Regardless of the stroke, I think even if he hadn't had the stroke, he might have resisted that. Because we see that also in how he led the Free Mandela campaign whilst he was in exile. I mean, for him to selflessly not even put his own face to that campaign, but put somebody else's face and work that hard that today we know the Madiba the way we do. It is also partly because of the work that he did by making sure that there was a Free Mandela campaign that resonated internationally with everybody.
It takes a very big person, and he was president of the ANC at the time, it takes a very big person to put someone else front and center.
Absolutely.
Most people are driven by ego.
Yeah.
They want it all for themselves. Here was a guy who really was happy to let other people shine.
Yeah.
And even once he wasn't president of the ANC anymore, I mean, he had a few years where he was still very influential, but didn't need to be the most important man in the room.
He had the deepest love for his people. And I think one of his strongest character that today most of us try and emulate, it's how humble he was in the midst of all of that achievement. Yet he remained very humble. He remained open to making sure that everybody else moved with him, and it wasn't just him, the face or the winner of whatever achievements that we made as a country. And I think those are the characters that as a foundation we're also beginning to anchor ourselves to work hard in ensuring that we don't lose that. And at best, we impart that even to young people today, that achievement doesn't mean arrogance, doesn't mean the winner takes it all, but the winner could even be the guy or the lady or the woman in the background, and you can equally win. I guess even to show as the extreme sense of how humble he was, even us as a foundation, I think, have been too humble in promoting who he was and sharing him lavishly with the world. And that's some of the key the key decisions that we have taken to make sure that post the centenary, and even as part of the centenary, we embark on a program that would ensure that South Africans do not stop learning from him and taking a leaf from his amazing legacy so that we can be a better South Africa to the one he delivered.
I think a lot of people would like to know where the sites are around South Africa that relate to the Tambos, because obviously they spent many years in exile, but they were buried in Benoni.
Yes, in Wadville.
That's right. And he and Adelaide were buried side by side, even though there was a few years between their deaths. And obviously when they were living in
London,
that house, is there a commemorative plaque there? Is it still, does it belong to South Africa, or is it now in private hands?
It belongs to South Africa. It's used by the South African Embassy in London. So it is like a real commemorative place that can be visited, and people could see the actual house in which they lived for those 30 years, because that's the home that was the Tambo home for 30 years. So it's owned by South Africa, and the British government is still a strong partner with us in ensuring that that legacy carries on. There's even a park close by named after him, and that's the park that they used to love going into. In Zambia, the house in which he lived also has been turned into a national monument. It's now Pire House. It's been declared by last year. The Zambian government declared it a national monument. So it's a house that can now be visited by South Africans so that we can get up close and personal. So Benoni, as you said, there's the house, there's the center, the grave site. Very close to the grave site, there's the OR Tambo Narrative Center, which is like a little archive space where you can go and take a short tour of his life, see more about his life. And it's again one of the pieces where we want to grow it into a distinguishable state, rather place where people could visit and learn more about his life. I think it gives 20% of who the man really was, and the plan with Ekurhuleni is to make sure that it begins to house all of the memories that we have and the exhibitions that we have about him.
I know you've only got a little bit of time, but did you meet the man? Did you meet Mum Adelaide?
Actually, I'm one of those South Africans that only were inspired by who they were and the lives they led. I never met any one of them. I saw OR from a stage when I was a young student at Wits, and he really charged us. For me, that was the day, because we had always sung the songs of Oliver Tambo, Teta Nobota, Khulule Mandela, and he was this icon that we pleaded to and read so much about. And when he came and addressed students at Wits, it was like the end of the world for some of us in that crowd of thousands. You know, when you feel like you're right at the back, but at the same time you feel like you're so close to him just because he's back in the country. The man whose voice used to come through Radio Freedom more than anything else, and you couldn't get much on him. So I think I'm one of those South Africans that were inspired by him. And this year, given the significance of the year, we've done a lot of activities and events where we engaged with people who worked and lived with him, and it is through them that we every day learn so much. And I think anybody else who never even saw him could learn a lot by partnering with us and staying close to the events that we do, where we bring those that lived and worked with him. For an example, by October this year, actually his birthday is on the 27th of October. So his actual, what could have been his 100th birthday, comes on October. Mm-hmm. And we have asked former President Thabo Mbeki to deliver the lecture, the centenary lecture. And he's one person, as you said earlier, who really lived by next to Tambo. One of the actually pseudonym he has amongst the colleagues is that he's referred to as the other son of OR, given that OR had only one son, who's Dali Tambo.
Dali.
Yes.
Is Dali involved in the foundation?
Very much so. He's actually, it's the family that set up the foundation. And therefore he's one of the trustees, him and his sister and his wife and many other people that sit on the board. So we'll be celebrating him again on that day. And I think those that really want to know more and hear from firsthand about who this great man was, but also listen to that in line with where we are as a country today. Because I think it's one thing to remember who they were and what they did, but I think what's important and what we strive to do as a foundation is to say, how does that help us today? Mm. How can we use that to translate it to a solution that's relevant? Because their solutions were good for that time. They cannot always be the same solutions that we use. But out of those, there's a lot of wisdom that we can learn. Things like how you become inclusive, how you remain focused on your goal, and how you do not shy away people you disagree with. And that's one value that OWAC was very strong with. You mentioned Chris. He loved Chris like his son, but they headbutted so many times that people even used to think, what's wrong with OWAC? Why doesn't he just chop this boy off? Because he's difficult, he's rebellious, yet he understood that it is in difference that we get better in whatever we're trying to do. And yes, his heart was thoroughly broken when Chris passed on. And as you said, part of it, most believe that he suffered the greatest pain on that day when he sat by the graveside after Chris was buried and everybody else moved. And OR remained seated, just looking at that lump of soil, and his heart went. And I think that's part of what really exacerbated his stroke.
And you say he liked to argue and he liked to disagree with people.
He was a serious intellectual. He enjoyed discussions because I think he learned more from that than just, you know, always putting forth his own views. His successes are credited to the fact that he embraced other people's views. So discussions, debates, arguments were one of the trademarks that made him excel. I mean, intelligent as he was, most of his speeches were written by people that he worked with, like Thabo Mbeki himself worked as one of his speech writers. Mm. And yet Thabo Mbeki will talk of how many times his drafts had to go back and forth.
He didn't accept mediocrity?
Not at all. To a point where even by the time he read out the speech, Thabo would say, I wouldn't even recognize the speech, yet I would have drafted it over 7 times. Sleepless nights, sending it back forth and seeing the value of his comments. That's the one thing that was good about him. The back and forth were not just to give you trouble, but you could see the value. He would put a word in the speech and you would have to debate and argue as to what would that word do when others read it. Would it deliver the meaning that you really wanted to deliver? Mm. And you'd go over and over this word until either you're convinced it's the right word or you replace it with what is the most appropriate word to put in whatever message you wanted to put across. And that, I think, was the kind of person who helped us today be able to enjoy the freedoms and the democracies that we have. And because of that, we cannot afford to not continue to protect and build on what he gave us.
What do you think he would make of the current goings on in the ANC? I mean, do you think he would be concerned? Do you think that he would be factional about things? Do you think that he would be trying to unify the party? We discussed with Charles Ngakula the other day, not only the bombing that he had to endure when he was in Lusaka, but also the fact that he called conferences to pull the ANC together when it looked like it was pulling apart.
Yeah.
And he said that is precisely what he would advise needs to be done right now. I mean, we can't speculate on what he would do, what he would say, but perhaps we know from what he wrote about the ANC at that stage, how he intended the vision to unfold.
I think the one thing we can all also extrapolate out of looking at how he led is that he wouldn't give up on the ANC. So I believe that he would work really hard to try and rebuild the ANC, to bring unity. The moments that we can all read about, the Kabwe, the Morogoro, are moments that the ANC could have completely deteriorated and broken up. And yet he stood fast. He worked tirelessly to ensure that they were in foreign land. That's even worse than us being back home with a democracy to back us up. So the only message we can extrapolate without second guessing him is that he would appeal for unity. He would appeal for not castigating those that we don't agree with, but have a broader open mind, because at the end of the day, South Africa belongs to all of us, be it black and white, be it different political formations, but it is through the diversity of all that we can continue to have a better country that we all aspire for.
It's quite incredible if you think about the Mandelas, the Tambos, the Sisulus. These are like our royal families almost.
Yes.
You know, if you think about the contribution they made to the ANC and then obviously to a free South Africa later on, it's such a sadness that two of these great men didn't really get to see very much of a burgeoning democracy.
Mm-hmm. I think it is, but we at some point accept that life is life and death is upon all of us. And I think today we lament and feel that way more so, because I think half of us, you spoke about guilt earlier, we feel a slightly guilty that we're letting them down. And I think that's why we keep on saying it's not fair that they are not here. As if almost when they were here, we'd still want them to get up and fight for our freedoms. And I think that's unfair. They fought their fight and they delivered what they delivered so well. It was so intact. And I think the guilt we have, it's about what am I doing as Linda to ensure that I continue to build on the platform that they created. What are you doing as Cliff to ensure that, and I think it's when we fail to answer to ourselves that we turn around quickly and say, it's so sad they are not here, as if almost would run to them and say, please, get up and do it again, you know, lead us again. And I think that's not possible. We are here today. They gave us this amazing, rich legacy of protected freedoms. We have the Bill of Rights in the Constitution that OAG vociferously fought for, its inclusion. We have a constitution that allows us so many good checks and balances that can help us advance and deal with our own problems or conflict. And we have a democratic state that is far better than what we had before 1994. What more do we want? And I think, why doubt ourselves? I think in all of us, there is a bit of an Oliver, if we really want to be truthful. We fight different things in our personal lives, and I don't see why we cannot fight beyond our personal lives into the public space, because our personal lives are worth nothing for as long as the public space looks the way it does today, where we all don't pull together, where we all second guess, where we all go to gather for ourselves, not for the rest of us, where the poor continue to be waiting for something that we cannot even describe when and what. We continue to say, this is a young democracy, please wait. Yet 20% of us are flourishing and living large. When the economy was growing, how hard did we fight to ensure that the benefits of that economy trickled down up to the poorest of the poor? We didn't. We kept on asking them to wait, and even now we want them to wait. And I think we all need to awaken that in ourselves that says, it is not just about me, but it is about the rest of the South Africans. And if my brother is well, so will I be well. For as long as my neighbor is not well, then I am not well.
Well, those are powerful words, Linda. Thank you so much for coming to spend some time with us. I know you've got a busy day ahead of you too. And happy birthday to Mum Adelaide Tambo in her stead, and obviously to Madiba as well for Mandela Day. But thank you for enlightening us on the work of the Oliver and Adelaide Tambo Foundation. Please keep up the good work.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ah, Rihanna and DJ Khaled with Wild Thoughts. It's Tuesday morning. Lots going on here.
I went to the best party, I have to say, this past weekend. And this is why I love my friends, though. Because we try to keep it classy. This song played. They're like, no, we want Santana.
Oh, really?
And we got the DJ to actually solve. We're like, no, who's this little Rihanna thing? We go to the classics.
Wow, good.
Classics. Like
I love the way people think they're superior when they pull out the old school version of something.
Like, we look down on everybody else who was enjoying this song.
Remix and shove it.
No, we need Santana.
But you know, Rihanna is one of the few artists who makes producing random noises catchy and tolerable. No. I don't mean this as an insult. Like, I love my favorite part of the song is where she's going, wah, wah, wah. Genuinely, that's my favorite part of the song.
That's great.
And before that, there was, wah, 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 wah. Yes. Like, she just makes random noises, and
Ella,
it's catchy.
Ella,
and
umbrella,
you're like,
Ella.
It's fine, Rihanna girl, you can do it, it's fine.
But well, if you are watching her do the random noises in random pieces of clothing, it doesn't have the same appeal, though.
What I love in that work, is that she eventually just goes, she's not even saying words.
Making noise.
Get to this chorus, you'll hear what I mean. She's given up totally on articulating words.
If aliens had to invade Earth, we do not send Rihanna.
Let me just find this chorus.
Because of course.
I mean, what is she even?
Spend some time away. Now you need to forward and give me all the work.
Yeah, we know that's work.
Nope, we don't know that.
It doesn't mean a damn thing.
A phenomenon.
But because it's Rihanna, we accept it. We're like, it's fine.
Still, a lot of people saying it's not as good as the Gwyneth Paltrow musical.
Oh, well, I mean, nothing will be
which we're planning. All right. This is from Kate. She says, hip, hip, hooray, Mandela Day. We're doing a cleanup of Nahoon Beach, an inspired way to kick off the day. Later today with my teen daughters and friends, we'll be spending time at the Greensleeves Home of Safety in East London, playing games with over 30 homeless kids. Please say happy birthday to my friend Vineshri. All right, fine. Normally we don't like to do that. May your butterflies flutter, have a beautiful day, blah, blah, blah. Welcome back, Ben. I just want to have a bitch and moan to the clown that invented the onesie, the ultimate cock block tool for women to use. Get one of your kinky friends, Mubs, to come up with one that has a removable flap in the front.
Yeah, but just for practical reasons, there must be a flap.
Yeah. Because even if I do get my wife to start considering some sexy time in the winter, I lose the battle by having to take the onesie off and risk getting cold.
Yeah, but it's just a different element. I bought Daniela a onesie recently. I don't regret it.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm it's being nice asked for the advice. Ben, you're the one in a relationship in this dynamic.
Onesies are very comfy, lovely things to wear. Think of that as your primary, then worry about your cock. I mean, come on. It's not always about your cock.
A lot of us don't, though, and that's why.
By the way, if you would like to subscribe to the cliffcentral.com newsletter, that is one way you can get regular updates from us and all the things that are going on. You can subscribe to specific things in the newsletter, which will allow you to choose a tailor-made version of it for yourself. So, for example, you want to hear more about business, entertainment, leadership, sport, gossip.
Sport.
No. Gossip, sex, there's all kinds of categories. You can go and choose, and you just click on the ones that you're interested in, and we will send you a specially tailor-made version of our newsletter.
So if you type in Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina, will you get certain parts out of the newsletter?
Well, you'll certainly get today's podcast.
But it's not
and
that
you can
finite.
Subscribe. You can subscribe to particular podcasts too. Now, while we're talking about Rihanna, it got me thinking. There's a video going around, and Mubs actually just tweeted it out just now of Mariah Carey.
Wow, this is everywhere.
We can't even keep a straight face when you think about this.
It's so unbelievable. She is so lazy.
It's so beyond lazy.
Okay, so Mariah's on stage with a bunch of male dancers, and yes. They're all dressed in like navy uniforms, and she's standing there in a little pink outfit, and she's got, by the way, the widest hips and thighs I've seen in ages. So she's really, I would have thought twice about wearing a.
No, but we're still squeezing into the latex costumes, Gareth. We are still.
She shouldn't be. She really shouldn't be. Anyway, she's on the stage, and these guys are pulling these dance moves. I mean, they really are working. And she's standing in the middle, and she could barely be asked to lift her arms. I mean, it's just. She's kind of disinterested in actually doing anything that even resembles work. And then they all sort of bend over in front of her, and the two of them lift her up onto their backs.
Yes.
And then she kind of just waits to be pulled off again. She gets put down. She hardly even moves herself, her own body. She's prepared to do as little as is humanly possible. The guy has to lift her leg when she is meant to hug him.
Yeah.
She's wearing the most F off heels you've ever seen in your life.
I mean, at one point, when the one guy is lifting her leg to dip her down, a second guy comes back to hand her the microphone. She won't even take the microphone.
He has
to hold it for her while she carries on singing.
Mimi, man. Yes.
Unbelievable.
I'm like, why does she bother anymore then?
I mean, we can tell you don't want to be there.
Then, yeah. Is she like working off maybe a recording deal or performance, whatever the case is.
She probably signed some contract a while ago, and now she's really pissed off that she even has to do these shows, because she would probably much rather be at home.
Because right now she's also about to go on tour with Lionel Richie.
Oh. Poor Lionel Richie. Oh. You know he's going to be doing all the work.
Lionel has already accepted, and he said this candidly, that he's already anticipating diva antics, and so it's just part of dealing with Mariah, though.
Yeah, I can imagine she must be a nightmare to be around. She's the one who asks for all those things on her rider.
Yes.
She's got like a list of 100 things that if Mariah's going to do a concert for you, you need to provide all this different stuff.
Including the fact that you don't film her in under fluorescent lighting.
Oh, she doesn't want fluorescent lighting?
Fluorescent lighting doesn't make her look good. Oh.
But I bet at home as well, she has like 5 shirtless men feeding her on a couch.
Yeah.
All day. And it's cold. And then she's like, she whips them if they shiver.
Listen, if the R. Kellys of this world can have sex cult mansions.
I don't see why Mariah shouldn't. Yeah, she's worked hard for it.
Yeah, but just don't perform. Give a quarter-ass performance, Mariah. That's all.
Well, didn't she also do that thing at Times Square last year with the New Year's?
New Year's Eve this year.
Yeah, she...
What a mess.
She was lip-syncing, but she wasn't even.
And then what happened? She forgot the words? Or what happened?
No, she just handed the microphone to...
The track didn't...
See, Kristen, yeah.
Didn't work, wasn't synced well. So then she fumbled, then the track stopped. Then she still was just like, okay, screw it. And instead of going off stage, she just walked around aimlessly.
Oh, yeah, and she just stopped performing.
It was just very weird. It was the strangest, most messed up performance in history, and people are still talking about it.
We didn't have a check for this song, so we'll just say it went to number one, and that's what it is. Okay. Feels like a
I just stopped singing.
We're missing some of this logo, but it is what it is. But I like the way you... I'm going to say let the audience sing, okay? We didn't have a soundtrack for this New Year's, baby. That's okay.
She really doesn't care.
Mariah.
I would say let the audience sing. She's just screaming instructions at everyone.
Now she just sounds like RuPaul.
She really doesn't know what to say.
Nope.
I want a holiday too. Can I not have one?
I want a holiday too. Can I not have one?
Oh, Mariah.
All these people are in New York. They're gathered to see you. Mm. And this is what you're saying to them. And her ass is just way too big. But she's lip-syncing wrong.
Oh, Mimi.
Without moving her mouth, she hits that high note. It's just very odd. It's the whole thing is extremely odd. It's if she's weird. You know, she's definitely lost her mind.
When you've reached legendary status, you don't have to prove yourself anymore. So I do not understand why the likes of her are still working. I really don't.
Yeah, it gives them something to do. Otherwise, it's just cocaine and hookers.
But she has kids. Like, just sit at home with your kids. I think Mariah should.
Kids are boring, Sia.
They're boring okay, and they're a lot of work.
On a yacht. I don't. Who was this? I heard of this. Oh yeah, the owner of Topshop. He lives on a yacht, guys.
Yeah, he's a sailor.
He lives on a yacht. What? Hello.
But again, it's...
That's what you could be doing, Mariah. Not, you know, like, trashing your reputation.
Yeah, look, it's a case of when you've been doing it your whole life.
Mm.
I mean, Mariah has been a performer her entire
guys,
life.
Also, sometimes you just don't know when to stop, eh?
Exactly, but you also need the attention. I mean, what's she going to do? Start producing vagina eggs? She's not going to get the same attention.
You could have a revolving door to your yacht, and you have these little Cuban signors coming in and out. Like, have a fiesta on board, but just stop doing this. Release a Christmas album every 3 years and hope
just
for a natural disaster.
With that same goddamn song that every
pretty much.
Thank you.
Not for Christmas. People will keep on buying that.
And then
crap.
You remix it as per the time. So you techno funk it
and
or dubstep
stop
it.
Wearing the old 1980s style bikini bottoms. Stop
yeah,
with
she'll
that.
Never let that's that go. It. It's like Madonna.
I was thinking, who do we have to thank for that? It was Madonna. She started that
Madonna
whole...
and He-Man.
Oh, no, sure.
It was He-Man first.
Yeah, it goes way further than Madonna. You're right, Ben.
He-Man.
It was He-Man.
And She-Ra. She-Ra was also wearing get-ups like this.
And the entire WWE.
Yeah.
Mm. Just bad, all of those things.
We have them to thank.
The sweating underneath.
Oh. It's a horrible look. It's a really bad look. It sort of has, it comes up high on the hips, and then it gathers in the vagina.
It's meant to be, though, this optical illusion, though, that a woman has this full hip situation.
Well, Mariah has the full hips.
So she doesn't need any more optic.
No, she doesn't need any optical illusion. Mariah, fine.
But can you imagine Mariah teaming up with Gwyneth for the musical? Mm. I just believe there needs to be an extra touch to it.
Mm-mm.
It's like the missing link.
No.
Because then Mariah would get Gwyneth into those vagina leotards.
But you see, Mariah, she's also that
with
kind
egg,
of...
egg flat.
She's also that kind of person who looks down on people. Like, there is... no way Mariah thinks that Gwyneth Paltrow deserves to be
darling
anywhere in her league.
Oh, totally.
Like, she would totally
so right.
look down
yeah, so
on
true.
Gwyneth. She would never work
Mariah
with her.
Could barely bring herself to be in the same room as Whitney, and Whitney was actually her equal, if not her superior.
Yeah, they did.
You remember?
They did one song
yeah,
together,
yeah, yeah.
didn't they?
Yeah.
So When You Believe song.
That's right, from some cartoon.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what she should be doing. Working on, like, a movie theme song once. Yeah.
Just we go into the studio and you just sing.
Ooh, Mariah.
But remember, a lot of people also went to her concert when she came out here, and they were very disappointed. Mm. They said it was the most boring, awful. Singing was crappy. Shame.
She was late.
Shame.
She should hope for like another Katrina. Then she can do like, you know, a beneficial song, raising funds, whatnot, while on her yacht. See, I need to advise
you. Yeah, you really think this yacht's an important part of the whole thing. All right, ladies and gents, have a good Mandela Day today. We will we'll catch up tomorrow morning between 6 and 9 and we wrap it up with the un-news for this morning. And then we can clear out of here and let you sit in the company of Bumi and the rest of the team with T-Systems and a whole lot of exciting and new and innovative and clever cutting-edge ideas. That's what we do for the next hour on CliffCentral.com. You don't want to miss it. A new list has been released documenting Africa's richest countries. Mauritius is at the top of the list, but right down at the bottom is Zimbabwe. Robert Mugabe says the list is the evil work of the West and that African countries should not be seen as rich or poor, just free of colonial masters. His Zimbabwe tops the list when it comes to being the most free, and that's all that matters. In other news, ANN7 have officially been fined by the Broadcasting Complaints Commission for again misquoting Helen Ziller's tweets on colonialism. The Gupta News Network said they had no knowledge of doing this, but if the BCCSA goes round to the Saxon World compound today, Atul will be there to pay the fine between 3 and 4 p.m. when he hands out the weekly Black First Land First wages in brown envelopes. And finally, the Proteas are back on top in their clash against England. Faf du Plessis' team rolled over the hosts within 4 days, and they're naturally hugely confident going into the third test. So confident they were even taunting Ben Stokes with ginger jokes again. Isn't that nice? We will see you tomorrow.
This is CliffCentral.com.